Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Monday stream. This is kind of our big guest week, I guess, because we've got our guest who will introduce himself in a second. We've that was bizarre. Oh, hi guys. Trying to disconnect as well. Try to reconnect. There we go. Aha. There we go. Yes.
Hello.
Sorry about that. As soon as we started the stream there, our ISP that's been a bit up and down all day has decided to pull our internet. So that's lovely.
That's great, isn't it? We go on to do a stream about how people aren't paranoid enough. And we're going to talk about all sort of glowy-related subjects.
Yeah.
And the moment, yeah, paranoia increasing sharply.
Paranoia increases sharply, yes. We may see some slight up and down because I'm currently tethered to a mobile connection here. But, yes. Sorry, you were about to introduce yourself there, Simeon, anyway.
Oof. Ah, well, we are live again now.
Yes, we are live again now.
Yes. Ah, sorry. I'm a boomer here. I am Semigog. Yes, I'm very happy to join you both today. I look forward to this interesting discussion. People who are not aware of my channel can find it on YouTube. You can also find it over on BitChute and Odyssey. There's a sister channel with old content called Safer Space. And you can follow me on Twitter and on Telegram and on Gab.
Yes.
I have books for sale. Go to Amazon and buy my goddamn books. There's one called Vinculum by Oliver Perrin. That's a sci-fi. And there is one called Cinders from the Bloomery of Youth, a touching, heartfelt collection of poetry, which I'm sure will strike you all to the quick.
Ah, thank you. That was a very efficient shill, and hopefully that will be the it for our technical issues there. If you guys want to donate, the best way to do it at the moment is actually via PayPal, because we had some issues with Streamlabs. We are trying to set up like an Entropy or StreamYard stuff still, but I've had a bit of trouble with that as well to get payment stuff to connect. We are still monetized on YouTube. If you guys want to send us some stuff and send us some questions and things as we're still live, while we're still live.
Yes.
The government's trying to take us down.
Yeah, please do let folk know that we have actually gone live now.
And yes.
We haven't been got at, yet anyway.
Do retrieve the stragglers. there were people watching and now there aren't. but that's the infrastructure for you. Everything's in a state of collapse at the moment. But we wanted to get you on because you have kind of a similar outlook to we do, especially considering the topic of many of the streams we've been doing recently, which is that a lot of people don't grasp the gravity of a lot of things that go on in relation to the security state, the police, and just generally your interactions online or even offline.
Yeah, there's no such thing as privacy. Everyone is a Fed, etc.
You can never be too careful either.
No, it's kind of a big subject there. I know one of your kind of mantras is that if you're on social media, you are inside their weapon. I do like that phrasing.
Yeah, because it's designed not only to weaponize what you say in a variety of ways, depending on how the algorithms are tuned and what is or is not delivered to any given party, but also it's all weaponized against you as well. You are the target of the shell. You are the shell, and you're also inside the barrel of it.
Oof, it's a big thing we've been trying to hammer home to people, is the relationship between social media and the security state. It's a big subject area that people don't really realize that there is no separation between the two of them.
I think as well, and it'll be one of the main topics we're going to go over this evening, because there is a big disconnect, I think, between a lot of the people who are online engaging in activism now and people who engaged in activism in the real world, let's just say prior to the 2000s. There is no real direct link for the most part between those groups of people and what we are doing. And the fact that some of us are now going back into the real world, now that we've realised online activism has its limits and many of its drawbacks, I think it's worth going through a well-understood worked example of why IRL activism also has a whole host of pitfalls and worries that you might want to consider.
Well, I will say that...
Go on.
I was going to say, in preparation for the stream, I did do a quick thread on Twitter. We'll talk about it a little bit, but just about facial recognition in the UK. And despite all the headlines saying it is no longer happening, it is still happening. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, it is run by my, for legal reasons, it is run by my unpaid media intern. So, but do go on, Sammy.
Well, I was just going to say that the human, as they like to call it, human intelligence dimension of all of the security, intelligence, and law enforcement agencies is, of course, the most long-standing part of it. Now, back in the days, I remember my brother was in a Ranger battalion, and, you know, he told me that on base, you know, when they were doing exercises, part of the drills that they would do is they would literally take the receiver of the telephones. This was in the 80s, and this was just standard operating procedure, you know, as a drill for, you know, real combat circumstances or real wartime circumstances or alert or whatever, and they would unscrew, you know, some of us are old enough to remember when you had a receiver sitting on the cradle and you would pick it up and one part would be the microphone by your ear, the speaker by your ear, and one part would be the microphone by your mouth. They would be required to literally unscrew the lower portion of the headset and pick up the microphone out of the phone and remove it. So while the human intelligence part is the oldest part, the wires and signal intelligence is something that's, you know, long standing. And for people who don't understand the seriousness of it, after my father died, back around 2013, somewhere in there, my brother, who has the same name as, our father, went and, you know, did a search to see, you know, what was out there about him and his background, just for the hell of it, you know, Googled our dad. And it just so happened that some a whole tranche of paperwork of the FBI's related for some reason to the JFK files, I think with Cuba and Bay of Pigs, probably. I find reference to my dad, to his ship, to confidential informants who had, you know, been tracking people who'd been trying to hire the ship from him to get into the territorial waters of Cuba. So, you know, from 1962, suddenly released FBI documents include my, you know, father and his sloop and his activities from 1962. So, you know, for me, the whole idea where everyone says, oh, there's not really anything going on like this, I'm like, bullshit. I was born at night, but not last night. And I have, you know, any number of other stories I could share about the human intelligence and IRL aspect of it that I encountered just in the course of living abroad and having had a question mark placed over me because I was somebody without the usual explanations for why they live abroad. And so, of course, as a matter of standard practice, the intelligence agencies wanted to just sort of look in and see what I'm doing. Not that I mind that, not that I think it was, you know, some super special thing, like they were out to get me. It's just, you know, you've got a foreigner living there without an easy, straightforward set of explanations. So they send actual swinging dicks to go and, you know, darken your doorstep and find out what's going on. And they do that in a number of ways. But, you know, I don't know about the whole, all the ground you want to cover with this. So, you know, if you need any of those anecdotes, I've got them.
But, well, I think there'll be a number of examples where you can probably bring some in, because I want to go through the example, and it's something we've mentioned before a few times, but haven't really treated in full. And it's what's referred to as the Special Demonstration Squad.
Yes, I believe this was last mentioned... I believe it was first mentioned in the first proper stream for this channel, which was talking about human intelligence sources. It was the covert human intelligence, like, regulation of
the CHIS bill.
Yeah, the CHIS bill. It's a complete mouthful, but basically the UK government made it so that anyone who is effectively a state employee or state agent can be at any time, one, counted as a human intelligence source, an intelligence officer, and can authorize members of the public to collect information for them. Mm. And it was an extremely controversial bill that flew under the radar that we went into highlights. But the Special Demonstration Squad was folded into a lot of what became the kind of human intelligence wider apparatus of the UK police force. It is a bit of a rat's nest, but...
Yeah, it's... It was originally started
rats,
as we,
quite literally.
Yeah, as we see here from the Wikipedia, we've got a couple other sources on it as well. There's actually a couple of semi-interesting Guardian pieces that I think only exist because it allows for, shall we say, a certain framing, but we'll get to that. It was originally started up in the 60s as a way to combat anti-Vietnam War demonstrations. They wanted to use it to get in around essentially hippie organizations and stuff that they thought were either connected to foreign governments or large drugs operations or possibly terrorists or communists, the IRA, whatever excuse they were using at the time. But it wasn't just like a police unit per se, because it had very specific elements about it. There was no communication between Metropolitan Police and the Special Demonstration sort of Squad in any sort of meaningful sense. It was never a formal sort of relationship.
Yeah, compartmentalization is a matter of security practice.
So instead, the people who worked at that branch reported almost directly to the Home Office, which is like, I don't know, like the American equivalent of like some police branch in a city communicating directly with the Secret Service.
Yeah, it's like a special component. It's like what you see in the movies. They set up a special police squad that only speaks to the mayor and the FBI. It's that kind of thing.
If we go to in the document, we've got, I think it's the second link down.
Yes.
That one there, the British Library one.
All right, have we not got that one up?
As...
Oh, is it it's a PDF? Okay, yes. Sorry about that.
No, sorry.
I didn't realise that wasn't open, yeah.
But there's a couple of interesting bits in this. This is their sort of summary thing. If we go down towards sort of page 3 and 4, they get into sort of what the basic remit of the unit was. Again, its origins and being a way to survey and gather intelligence about the anti-Vietnam War movements. They then moved on to climate movements, animal justice stuff. All under the auspices of the fact that these people might have been engaging in some kind of, what's the word for it? Not terrorism per se, but like...
Direct action.
Yeah, direct action, sabotage, derailing trains, the sort of anti-fascist stuff we see nowadays, but slightly more genuine and not funded by the actual GLOWs themselves.
Yes.
And there's like weird omissions in here. I think I've quoted one bit of it. I can't quite exactly remember what page it was on. That talks actually directly about the Home Office link. They say, in the absence of any available Home Office documentation, there are only 3 direct references of ministerial involvement of awareness of SDS activities during the entire period. It is clear that on one occasion, in a year of significant and risky operation for the SDS, there was a briefing to the Home Secretary who expressed approval of the activities. The Home Office authorised and provided the separate and secret budget allocation to specifically meet the costs of the SDS accommodation and transport only from 1969 to 1989. This was deliberately kept outside of the mainstream Metropolitan Police funding, possibly either due to national significance of SDS work or to maintain the level of secrecy. And they go on to other bits here. And we'll see from the other sources that we've got that some of the things they actually say in their own like Home Office report here actually aren't true. I mean, bullet point 3 here, they're talking about how no one from the Stephen Lawrence Justice Campaign was targeted. But I believe both in the Wikipedia and in one of the Guardian article links I have, people from the Stephen Lawrence sort of Justice Campaign sued. Now, they couldn't sue and get anywhere because the people they were suing didn't exist.
Well, before we get into it, and I will need to tell people what the Stephen Lawrence kind of campaign was in a little bit. But I was going to ask Samuel, is there any kind of American equivalent you can think of the Special Demonstration Squad? Is there a specific unit that is sent out there really to go in and break up protest movements?
None that I'm consciously aware of, you know, that I can be certain about, because these sorts of things are kept quiet. Also, I it's not my particular interest area. I simply assume that every single jar of jelly beans has a certain proportion that are poison. And when you eat jelly beans, you have to bear that in mind. The only thing I would say is that there are doubtless many of them. Because you've got different organizations that have different interests, and they will stick their people onto a given subject, or group of people, or to pursue and learn about a different theme. And they'll have different ends in mind. One of the things that everyone should bear in mind when they consider, you know, Fed in quotes, you know, when I use that term, I have reference to snitches, to, you know, people who screwed up and have to, you know, bring some more people in to get hanged so they don't get hanged, so to speak, down to just people who are employees of certain organizations. Like if you work for a trial judiciary or something, you're required specifically to report as a part of your conditions of employment with the government if any foreign person approaches you and asks you questions about certain things. There's a guy I met once who was working at a local technical college at a dinner party one time, and he was working on drone technology. And so I brought up the interesting subject of algorithms related to how locusts behave. And he very quickly excused himself from talking to me and got the hell away from me because he would have to report the discussion. Like, you know, you can dig specifically into these special teams that have special remits, but the reality is, you're going to be running into those generally in very specific circumstances, whereas you're going to have just a vast number of the least, last, lost, and loneliest who have to drag something back home so their, you know, probation officer or prosecutors will leave them alone. Those are going to be the kind of people that you're more likely to run into, unless, of course, you're doing a quote unquote direct action in some sort of protest, which of course I do not recommend. And then you're going to be more likely just to run into people who are not specifically in one of these groups, but are tasked with creating the kind of headlines everyone requires. So like recently with the business of the Gretchen Whitmer plot or whatever, you know, they had, I believe, 12 different FBI informants and agents working to create the spectacle that they required of quote unquote right wingers trying to kidnap the governor. So these special squads are interesting and important in their own right, and you should be aware of them. But just in terms of a numbers game, you're much more likely to come across someone who fucked up and now has been, you know, in old days in Atlanta, they would call it squad five probation, you know, the snitches or CIs, yes, and the rest who are, who've been wound up and sent to look for you. Those guys, generally, you'll be able to detect them because they'll be in a hurry. They need to get something done. There's always something that you have to act on. They'll be calling you. And, you know, when you don't answer, they'll call you again because, you know, there's a sword hanging over their head. In terms of in the United States itself, you know, whether there is a corresponding agency, I would say certainly. I don't know what it is, and I'm sure there's many more than one.
Well, the thing I find really interesting is that in the UK, as far as I can tell, since about the interwar period, we have had both MI5 and MI6, which are supposed to be intelligence organizations that operate outside of the remit of police or the standard police.
Yeah.
They can engage in espionage and they can engage in what we could maybe refer to as extra legal activity. And specifically, MI5 is the domestic branch of this.
MI5 very is the closest thing we have to an FBI. We don't have an FBI, so things like the Special Demonstration Squad tend to have the role that is blanket used by the FBI in the US.
But that's the thing I find so interesting, as you think that, you know, investigating domestic political groups in the UK would be the role of MI5.
Yes.
But no, instead, for some reason in the 60s, a whole, you know, specific squad with its own remit and what seems to be its own form of, like, unaccountability was just drafted up to fill that space. And we'll go through as well about some of the tactics they use, because I think later on we can relate this back to what we see in our own communities online.
Yes.
That they didn't necessarily go into these groups, just participate, collect a bit of information and then leave. They would go into these groups, engage in sexual relations with as many of the members as they could as possible, and then try and get the whole thing to fall apart around accusing people of affairs or being homosexuals or, you know, to the extent now where I believe in one of these Guardian articles, there is mention of a case whereby some women that used to be part of a climate movement in the 70s was made pregnant by one of these special demonstration squad officers, and then he disappeared 2 years later. So she is now left with a child of a man who doesn't legally exist, who she can't sue, who she can't engage with as, you know, a man who has escaped her as, you know, the father of her child. Instead, he's like a spy. It's very strange.
Yeah, and there's certainly no shortage of that kind of thing. You have to. The only way I can think of to
hit again.
Oh, has everything just died?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Is the YouTube still up?
I can hear you. Let me go look over on YouTube.
Oh, there you go. I think you went away for a second there. Sorry, pushed us out again.
Oh,
there we go.
If you can hear me, I can't hear you.
Yeah, no, we can. We're just having some slight fluctuations. Apologies, guys. I believe we are still streaming, but we're having some dropped frames and some slight hiccup issues. Like I said, we are on a mobile connection, so do be patient with us. We have autism.
Well, is everything audible again now to you?
I believe everything's fine now. Let's keep going.
I was just going to say that basically there are two ways of conceiving of what we have to deal with, just as a matter of course, not specifically being right wing, because hopefully everyone here is sensible enough to operate in civil and lawful fashion. But just as people living today in the world we live in, and the best way to conceive of what we're dealing with is... I guess it's the old Dungeons and Dragons alignment of lawful evil, right? And the idea that we're dealing with organized crime groups. As soon as you start talking about extra legal activities and the specific interests of whatever organization that you're dealing with, you know, one organization probably has as one of its targets to create a real perception of a credible threat from the right, right? So, you know, when you're dealing with people like that, you're dealing with... you're dealing essentially with organized crime. And these are different gangs that have enormous funding and technical expertise and training.
It's interesting as well that the methods that the Special Demonstration Squad used and the information that they've been given access to and the things that they're allowed to engage with are unthinkable even for normal police officers. I think on the third Guardian one we've got there.
Are we going to go through this one at some point?
I just wanted to have them there as examples of the fact that this stuff has been covered. But they went to the lengths of re-digging up birth certificates for dead children.
They basically did the classic identity theft method of repurposing the like national insurance numbers and former identities and birth certificates of like real dead children to give their story some proper bureaucratic weight if they were ever looked into themselves, which is I believe really is one shady and two unnecessary, or supposed to be unnecessary for a police service.
Unless, of course, you are operating above them.
Yes.
And what would happen in some instance would be that, you know, say you have a standard undercover officer looking at organized crime, the way that other police officers would know that they are is because their name or some of their information won't line up. Now, I know there's a lot more complex stuff they do nowadays to fool criminals who do background checks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But even, you know, we're talking right back in the 70s and the 80s they were doing this. This would be so that other members of police forces couldn't identify who inside, you know, groups that were defined sometimes as, you know, extremist political and terrorist groups were and weren't
policemen.
Feds.
Yeah. It meant that they couldn't be investigated themselves, which it's interesting that it gels quite well with your point, Sammy O'Gogg, of them essentially operating like criminal gangs. And they're even trying to come, you know, they're basically doing stuff that they don't want some of the bosses to know about. It's kind of a, you know, they report directly to the Don, as it were.
Yeah, and you've also got cases where they've received instructions from the bosses to be sure that the boss can't know about it due to plausible deniability requirements. So, yeah, sometimes they simply don't want them to know and they're off doing their thing, you know, kind of hanging there on the Orrin McIntyre's observations about the idea that there are no neutral institutions. Well, that, you know, that goes doubly and triply so for the kind of organizations we're talking about. But then there's also cases where they've been given a mandate by their by the authorities above them and then told that, you know, they can never know about it, which, of course, you know, we're all familiar with. We've all heard about that.
One of the most spectacular maneuvers that this that the police managed to do in terms of the Special Demonstration Squad was to do with the reclassification of racism, really. It's to do with the them trying to turn this into a race issue. Many years ago here in the UK, this was back in the 1990s, and it dragged on kind of into the 2000s. I had a thing here.
Talking about the McPherson report, though.
Yeah, I'm talking about the McPherson report, and the one of the most watershed moments in British police history happened in 1994 with the murder of Stephen Lawrence and then the subsequent investigation in 93-94 is when all the events took place. If people are around at the time, they will remember it because the conclusion of all of this was that the police was declared institutionally racist as a headline issue. And what was done was basically a whole bunch of bias training and sensitivity stuff. And basically it was the start of the complete, you know, people call it woke, but it really isn't. It's the institutional capture of the police to a much closer degree. And it was a real sleight of hand here because, as it talks about in this Guardian article, the officers infiltrated 18 families fighting for police justice. They framed this as a race issue to prevent the infiltration of the lives of essentially police dissidents, people who wanted the special people like the Special Demonstration Squad and the police in general investigated for their actions. It was fobbed off as, well, we're going to turn this into a big blanket racism issue so you won't look at the actual actions of our officers in entering into the lives of people who are complaining about police, not all of which were complaining about black, you know, the murder of black people. Those 18 families were not all kind of racial justice campaigns. Britain was quite a homogenous society still at that point. So there weren't even enough of them about for that to be the case in 1994. A lot of these families were white families who had people die in custody, but the McPherson report managed to gloss over the involvement of a Special Demonstration Squad by declaring the British police as institutionally racist. Yes. And completely hand-waving the issue.
On a slight side note, I did notice someone in chat was asking, how do people get, you know, how do people volunteer or are recruited for something like this? They don't. They are standard police officers who make some sort of misstep, fail, and then are blackmailed into performing work like this, which yes. generally seems to be the case, which is why they tend to be the sort of people who would be up for, you know, joining some random hippie organization and having sex with loads of different people to disrupt it from the inside. Yes. Because of the sort of people that like, often enjoy those kind of things.
I was just going to say that it's not, I know nothing, of course, about this Special Demonstration Squad, but from what I've seen and from what I've heard, you know, my late friend had considerable experience with everything from consulting with the FBI to being in the special forces, the kind that, you know, you're not allowed to have your picture taken, and then worked with the DEA and also worked as a bounty hunter. So, you know, had considerable experience of law enforcement and the military and even of intelligence to a certain degree. And from what I've heard from him, as well as things that I've seen myself, much of the stuff with the serious intelligence people that goes through families, just like cops, you'll have cop families, right? And those kind of people can be relied upon because they were raised in a certain way by their, you know, their parents or grandparents and the rest, to know about certain things and take it for granted, certain things that other people simply don't know about. Then you have, as you said, people who get in trouble, but they're not always police. They're very often criminals. I mean, I just took a look here quickly before I got online, and, you know, there's articles saying that the FBI paid $294 million between 2012 and 2018, an average of $42 million annually, with long-term informants comprising 20% of its intelligence relationships. The Drug Enforcement Administration shelled out $237 million between 2011 and 2015 and had over 18,000 active informants. They're, you know, talking about people who, airline employee who got $600,000 in less than 4 years, parcel employee received in excess of $1 million over 5 years. So they also take people who are hungry for money and who are located in really good positions, and they just plain pay them. But, and then in terms of the psychological profile of the kind of people that I've run into, that, you know, I can't prove it, but I'm pretty sure that, that they were involved in work of this sort to some extent. They have a kind of daredevil attitude. They get off on doing things that, other people, think of as being, risky. But there's also a personality dimension of that. It's not just the kind of people who want to go bungee jumping or, you know, base jumping or whatever. It's people who have those kind of attitudes, but they manifest socially. So, like, think, for example, of like your Dick and Dom types, right? I can't remember which one's the Dick and which one's the Dom, but the one that's really obnoxious, really the one who just
depends on the day of the week.
It's constant. Right. But the one who's really slobbering, the one that's more kind of sociopathic and aggressive, that's that kind of personality, you know, the kind of personality where they feel there's something in them that you encounter that makes them feel as though they can get away with anything. There is a psychological profile for a number of them too, as you said, that makes it so that at the end of the day, there's a part of them that gets off almost that duper's delight angle of being undercover and also knowing that they have a get out of jail free card.
I did see that some people mentioned COINTELPRO stuff from the 50s to the 70s. That is something that's a slight equivalent I was talking about. But yes, it is. You are right about the kind of people who get involved in this, that it is, they do look for certain personality types. There's a lot of psychometric testing. From what I can glean and what I can gather from reading around this, a lot of the people who were in the Special Demonstration Squad were kind of handpicked by this Home Office team over a number of years and enjoyed existing in this environment without accountability.
Yes, but there are some things that I find interesting about it. The unit itself was disbanded in something like 2008 and collated into what was referred to as the National Domestic Extremism and Disorder Intelligence Unit, which was formerly the National Domestic Extremism Unit, which operates under the National Special Branch Intelligence Service. But anyway, the whole point here is that the remit has been set out through the last, you know, 40 years of the Special Demonstration Squad about what they can get away with, how deep their cover goes. Especially, we can see this undercover list here, which is a resource I was not expecting to come across, to be totally honest.
Yeah, they had to at some point, I believe, release some of their former intelligence officer stuff here. And I will say, we're not expecting people to know a lot about the Special Demonstration Squad here. We're using it more as a framing device.
Yes.
In that this is one of the kind of more granular, kind of top of the iceberg things you can see about human intelligence sources.
But so we know the things they're allowed to get away with, we know how deep their cover goes, and we know how high up they're reporting to. They're not just reporting to, you know, a higher up within the Metropolitan Police or some.
Well, they also
office.
Can't be framed as a rogue unit either. They report directly to the Home Secretary.
Yeah, exactly. They report directly to Whitehall. And then they've supposedly wrapped all this thing up and ended it. But at the same time, we have the Covert Human Intelligence Sources Bill, which allows not only police officers, but any member of the civil service to essentially act like an SDS officer.
Yes. Like I said, if you guys want to see more about that, it's one of the first streams that we did. I'll probably link it at some point in the description.
And essentially, the last half hour of what we've gone over there is to build up to the point to say that if you are in the UK and you are trying to get yourself involved in any form of political organisation, there will be civil servants operating under the remit of the CHIS bill to make sure that you are monitored, disrupted, blackmailed, whatever is required to make sure that your group is ineffective and controlled, essentially.
Yes.
I did also notice as well that the 2014 report, that was the one we brought up at the start, that was the PDF, is a limited hangout, hasn't worked. So there was a further request put in by Theresa May in 2017 to have another report drawn up about the SDS. And we're supposedly going to get that later on this year, so that might be worth a look. But as well in the framing, we see in the Guardian articles that there's a lot of discussion about climate movements, socialist worker party movements, anti-capitalist movements. However, a large part of what the SDS did, especially towards the 80s, 90s and the 2000s, was focus on groups like BNP, National Action and the National Front, and all the various different, you know, unionist and loyalist groups from Northern Ireland. These people have, it's been almost completely ignored that the SDS existed to also monitor those groups. I mean, it's mentioned in here as well. I think it's under, it's the full title. So it's under British National Party.
Ah, right, okay.
And it's important to think about, you know, where you just said monitor. You know, a lot of people don't understand that there are all kinds of roles, right? Different organizations have different goals, and they deploy people with different roles to meet those goals, and there will be a variety of them, you know. So, you know, some people are put out there simply to establish status and to become thought leaders, and then to direct discourse in a particular direction, or to seem as though they're totally based and with you in every respect. And then suddenly, you know, where a particular subject comes up, they say, no, 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 we don't go that way here. We have to go a different way, right? They're put in there as Judas goats, or, you know, whatever. Then you have people who are put in simply to ferret their way through networks and to establish, you know, in their databases where different networks and different human beings overlap and how. Other ones, as you said, are there to sow chaos. Other ones, as we would imagine with the general sort of activities of confidential informants, are there to make a buck by feeding, you know, human beings into the great meat grinder of the prosecution apparatus. Mm. And then there are others who are sent in there simply to have to learn, to develop expertise in a given subject area. Like, think about how, you know, when we're talking to people online and somebody comes along and they're just suddenly asking a bunch of, you know, really kind of preschool questions about, yes, you know, nicknames for things, or who means, you know, who's being referred to and what means what. I remember when I encountered this whole world, you know, I'm a very strange person and quite paranoid in my own way. And I know about all kinds of sort of odd underground movements and these sorts of things. But when I encountered the online right, there was an enormous learning curve that took me like 2 years to, you know, I remember the first time everybody showing up in my comments section calling each other friends, you know, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Hello, friends.
So, we just like the frogs, so, okay?
Yeah. And so, you know, you have a certain number of people who are injected into the process simply to learn what the hell is going on. And I bring that up because, you know, when you think everybody's a Fed, you start thinking that, it means that everybody's out to prosecute you. Hell no. And I see somebody in the chat saying, you know, everyone is a Fed is too general. No. It isn't too general. It's the only course of action you can take, because yes, you do not know who is and who is not. And you must assume not that everyone is, but that anyone can be. And therefore, the only approach you can take is to assume everyone is. That yes, way you can't be surprised.
Well, someone in the chat, I will say we got a donation which mentioned something relatively, just a quick aside, I mentioned something relatively interesting, which was Operation Trust, which I was aware of. Thank you for the £5 there, Joe. It basically is in the 1920s, the Soviets actually doing Trust the Plan.
Yes.
And they went and created fake anti-Bolshevik resistance organizations and wasted people's time and then arrested everybody.
Yeah, this is one of the things that they used to pull down the White Army.
Yes.
When they tried to engage a sort of counter-reactionary force against Lenin and the Bolsheviks after 1917. One of the things you mentioned there that I think is very important as well for people to recognise is that the most people who are quote-unquote feds do not know they are feds, because the whole trick is never to make people realise that what they are doing is disrupting a whole entire global political movement. Instead, what you do is you convince them that some member of some political group is X, Y, or Z thing, and it is your job to go out there and make a couple of pieces of propaganda to prove that this person is whatever smear you want to give them. And it's about making sure that the people doing the actual busy work only think they're doing small things.
It is
one small thing at a time.
It's very compartmentalized. I mean, I've put the slide up on screen here from the Prism leaks. This is from GCHQ, them talking very casually about how their normal operating procedure when they find someone they, you know, dislike and want to make go away is to make up false sexual organizations, set up honey traps, change their photos, edit their photos, email and text their colleagues, neighbors and friends, basically as far as you can go into the illegal sphere of discrediting somebody. And it even mentions for economic reasons here. If you catch the ire of the security state, we've mentioned the in-person, the human intelligence and the signals intelligence as well that we've gone over in detail when we did our Prism stream, but it is the confluence of both of them that is the real kind of, I always refer to it as like the hidden fist.
Yes.
It's the hidden fist behind the liberal democracy is the security state. And it is pointed out in very small piecemeal bits, and it is covered with, you know, they're racist or sexist as the ills that they are committing, not the fact that there is this giant crushing fist that will come down and absolutely destroy or even kill individuals who they dislike for basically any arbitrary reason. And people need to be able to accept that and filter that into their reality to not be blindsided by it. And you're right, and the everyone's a fed is a good mindset, because as Evelyn mentioned, it doesn't matter if they know if they're a fed or not. A lot of people have handlers, and that is the big thing. You mentioned certain individuals earlier, but there are a lot of groups out there who you can tell are made up of younger people who are being steered and handled in a very heavy-handed way sometimes.
Well, as people who have spent the last couple years attempting to organise people both online and offline,
yes,
it's actually very difficult to do so. You know, it's not impossible, of course, but more often than not, it's really hard to get people to move in line and do the same thing at the same time for the same reason. Unless, of course, someone is coordinating behind the scenes. And that is always the thing that I think people should be aware of. If you are seeing people interact online with something in a very similar pattern, using the same symbology or same language or the same memes or whatever it is, there is more than likely some level of coordination going on behind the scenes. And maybe I'm going a level further with the paranoia, but when I see coordination, I do not think it's just internet spergs. I think there's always
no such thing as coincidence.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you'll to your point about people being assets, and not knowing that they are. One thing that you have to bear in mind, I know hopefully everyone here is aware of it, but there's the absurd joke that still gets perpetuated in television programs and movies where they wear a wire. And the bottom line, as we all know, is that everyone's carrying a wire with them voluntarily everywhere they go. It has, you know, microphones, multiple cameras, you know, and, you know, when you've got multiple people in the same room, they can doubtless turn on phones across the room and then justify, so to speak, the audio tracks with one another to catch different things. I mean, I remember when the damn microphone on my cell phone was switched, I got a thing from AT&T saying that back when I was still using AT&T, that that I had received an upgrade to my audio package or whatever, and everybody started complaining when I'd be talking to my mother or something, and you know, doing dishes in the background, they'd be like, "God damn, that's loud as hell, man! Mute yourself or something." Like, the microphones immediately became much, much more sensitive. So, bearing that in mind, you don't have to work for anyone to be picked out and identified with the, you know, the mapping of the network interactions and the overlaps of the nodes, so to speak. And you're just somebody that everybody likes. So they decide to listen to your phone and turn on the mic when they want to.
Well, look,
you
know,
you don't have to be actively, consciously participating.
I was going to look at Track and Trace, the COVID sort of thing they did. They essentially, without anyone's consent, decided that, oh, we're going to log where your phone is in relation to everyone else's phone indefinitely.
Yes.
I mean, that has just become a completely normalized part of the surveillance state now. There's that people were begging for it. Oh, you know, you've got to use the metadata from our phones and connect it all up together and use that so you can identify people who are positive with COVID and interacting with other people who are or aren't. And of course, people from, you know, who had been involved in prison programs basically rolled up and said, oh, don't worry, we've had that for years anyway.
Well, the thing I've got on screen here, again, is from a prison stream, but it applies equally to signals intelligence and human intelligence, you know, that you have to make peace with the fact that you live in a security state. That there is no rule of law. I should have really put that there is no privacy either. You cannot vote the security forces away, and elected officials are subordinate to the security agencies. It's what we went over when we talked about the whole social media is fake and gay thing. It's, you know, it's what we got kind of hammering home with some of the special demonstration squad stuff here now, is that whichever way you slice it, they have an unlimited remit, and you cannot rely on them to act in any way morally. And I think there's a lot of people, you know, I guess we take it for granted in our own minds, because I very much have the same mindset. Well, we very much have the same mindset as you do, Semiogo, which is you have to treat basically everyone with a baseline degree of suspicion, and you have to watch what you say, you know, not self-censor, but you have to watch how you phrase things and how you put yourself forward basically at all times. Otherwise, you are making yourself easy prey.
Yeah, and I see, is that Melon in the super chats there? Any thoughts on Blackpill Devon Stack and his exacerbation over people crying fed? I'm not sure exactly what instances he's talking about there, but if it's anything to do with like Patriot Front or any of the other sort of things that happen to be going on in a lot of American activism at the moment, all these guys walking about with shields and all sorts of gear in front of like Capitol buildings, throwing Romans and whatnot. I wouldn't go anywhere near that.
No.
If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a fucking duck.
Yes.
But it's also just completely inseparable from people who are idiotic and should not be taken seriously. And we're not going... I think a lot of people who counter-signal this kind of narrative are a little bit eyebrow-raising, because we're not saying you should go out there, throw people under the bus. We're not even going out there and pointing fingers and going, you're a fed, you're a terrible. But there are some people out there who give off extremely bad, you know, bad vibes. They do terrible things that are unadvisable in any circumstance, no matter what your organization you're in or who you are. But it's more of a general sense of mindfulness I try to encourage with people. A background. That's why this stream is called You Aren't Paranoid Enough. Mm. It's a background sense of caution. Like, people complain that our streams are quote-unquote black-pilled, but really we're just trying to filter reality to people.
Yeah. I do see Charlemagne asking there, what if it tastes like a duck? It depends whether or not your duck has been washed in Clorox first.
Oh, no.
But,
I want to add, if I can, very quickly on the theme of not being black-pilled. Sorry, Evelyn, I'll make this fast.
It's fine.
The whole point of saying that everyone is a fed is that you can let go of it.
Yeah.
The point of saying everyone is a fed is not so that you can go out and say, you know, PF is, they're a bunch of feds, you know? No. The whole point is that you let go, you put it down, because you've established a baseline, which is that everyone is a fed. So what if you say they're a fed? You must assume everyone is and conduct yourself accordingly, which is to say civilly and lawfully. You know, that's the only way that you can proceed. Now, God help you if you piss somebody off, because, you know, operating in civil and lawful fashion will be no protection at that point. And they can and do set people up, you know. But the point is that this is actually a tool that you can apply in life. Simply assume everybody's a Fed. And also don't assume that every Fed is after you or has your destruction in mind. I'm sure that there are many people who have been tasked with learning about the movement and the rest, and they get to know you and like you and the rest. And, you know, within whatever discretionary ambit they possess, you know, they might try to turn things in such a fashion when they make their reports so that you don't end up in crosshairs. You know, you can't assume anything about who these people are and what they might be after, other than the fact that anyone, just like any passing figure on the street, you know, when you look at the girl in the red dress, might transform suddenly into a matrix operative, you know, in the sense like was being talked about here. You know, some people, they'll just get a call, or someone will come down and visit them quite quietly, you know, over coffee, you know, walking out on the street or whatever, and tell them that there's some shit they now need to do. Or they might get pressure put on them by a prosecutor, or they might, you know, be motivated to do it because somebody will conjure some thing that they know about in the person's file that would make them easy to wind up and turn in a different direction. You don't know what their goal is. You don't know what particular organization they work for. You just have to assume that that's literally everywhere out there.
I also think of the sort of paradigm we have lived in since, oh, let's just pick a number at a random, since 1945, that any explicitly rightwards opposition to liberal democracy has been made illegal. I mean, this is basically the kind of unspoken fact that I know Thomas 7-7's very happy to put out there, and I think maybe we should sort of hit it home more. I think it was something I actually put in a tweet a while ago, that any organization that is publicly declaring itself as formally opposed to liberal democracy in that sense,
yes,
is either subverted in its origins or is soon to be subverted as it currently exists now. There is absolutely no way that groups like that can be left to their own devices. I mean, that is the whole purpose of, as you said earlier on as well, about monitoring. It is not just about, I know we focused earlier on about the examples where they're engaging in much more extreme tactics to fully dismantle these groups.
Yes.
Because I thought that was maybe the more stronger example to get people to realise what we're talking about. But it operates on so many different levels, and doubly so in cases where, you know, there's been a political paradigm set out for nearly the last 80 years that groups of that ilk are illegal.
Well, it's more extraordinary, as the UK example, we talked about the British National Party, that at the time it was being infiltrated by the police, essentially as a terrorist organisation. It was a fully certified political party. It had managed to jump through all the extreme legal hoops here in the UK that you have to do, and they are extreme, to become a registered political party and to be able to have sitting councillors and MPs. It is basically almost impossible. They had to, despite how the BNP was portrayed, water down their rhetoric. They had to change how they operate. Ultimately, they had to completely sever themselves from anyone who was anywhere related to street action. They became a purely political entity that, you know, danced to the Whitehall tune in many ways. And even then, it was still targeted by this special police division for destruction as a political party, which it casually talks about it here in the Wikipedia article, but that at the time was very illegal. It is very illegal to do that to an existing political party. It's like what happened to Trump with the FBI investigation and things like that, although that's kind of by the by. But it's a good demonstration, really, to remind people that the rule of law, political etiquette, all of these things demonstrably do not exist. And I know a lot of people know that academically, but it's something you have to know intrinsically, really. You have to keep that within yourself. But to pick up a point you mentioned earlier, it is also unlikely that you specifically are being targeted in a headline way. On the to shield the Substack, on Substack, antipolitics.substack.com is our is where we do our writing. There'll be a new one up there tomorrow. I wrote an article called Armchair Generals, in which I talk about the fact that really 99.9% of people are not important enough to be targeted people. You might be, you know, you might end up in a dragnet coincidentally, but unless you do something really, really stupid, or you are someone who is a complete linchpin of a movement that the power structure
has
gone.
An angle of approach, a vector of approach for someone else. Yes.
It's very unlikely that, you know, that Klaus Schwab or anyone in the FBI knows your name or cares about you. It's this weird parasocial kind of protagonist effect that people have when they're very online, that they let this cripple them because they have the idea that they're the most important person in the world. Therefore, they must be the most targeted person in the world. And I try to stress people, what we're doing here is not trying to make people actually like schizophrenic. It's to make them able to filter reality better. And I'm very glad that a lot of people have managed to come with us on that. And a lot of the discourse we have, you know, in the chat, from the streams, people who do demos on Discord or Twitter, they do get it. But we have to kind of deliberately talk to a smaller audience in many cases, because for a mass audience, this stuff does not gel.
No.
It does not work. It completely fries people's brains.
You have to be able to understand that the world is dangerous around you. It's like, you know, I got considerable support and mentoring, I guess you could call it, when I was young from an old soldier. And so there was a very, very different attitude about life and what could happen. It's simply a matter of course, when you've been exposed to such things, that you come back to Wally World and Disneyland and you look around and you say, this is all a joke. Really bad things can happen. You know, it's in some respects, it's very similar to a guy who knows that the world has danger in it. It's very similar to the way that person has to speak to women he cares about, because you're like, look, you have to look at what's going on around you before you get out of your car and walk up to your apartment. And it's just not wired in them, the majority of them, until something very, very bad happens to them. You know, they're just out, you know, getting drunk before they go into a bar one night and they're busy, you know, falling down in the parking lot in their high heels, laughing drunk. And you have to look at them and say, no. This is not how it works. There are actually very, very dangerous things out there.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you don't live your life. It doesn't mean you treat everything around you like you're a parent that wants to put, you know, a skateboard helmet on their child when they're going to, you know, play video games or something. You just have to recognize it as a reality.
Well, the thing I think about as well is that there seems to be, and I think this is, funny enough, this is something that actually Curtis Yarvin has talked about a number of times.
Ah, yes, our favourite Why Not?
Yes, Tablet Magazine's Curtis Yarvin. That there is an attempt to shoebox a lot of the opposition to modern political discourse into like a sort of villain archetype.
Yes.
And I think as we carry on, and especially as the whole containment operation to put woke back in the box and all sorts of other political drama carries on around us, that there is a concerted effort to push people into that villain archetype. And they will do it happily because they think it's fun, it's edgy, they get to pretend they're this sort of cool bad guy with all these layers of irony on top of them. And all of a sudden somebody shows up and either takes it too far or, you know, basically puts forward that, by the way, I'm a police officer, you're now going to inform on what you do and
yes,
who you talk to, otherwise I'm going to get in your trouble. And then, as you say, the moment clicks and they realise, oh shit, the real world's actually really scary, and engaging in LARPs pretending you're some sort of member of the Third Reich or something is no way to go. And it's not worth it for the laughs you get out of it in the meantime.
No, like we always say, we do try and be comedic here. We do have our fun, but generally, serious topics are serious, and if you're laughing, you're losing a lot of the time.
Yes.
I just went to get up here a tweet you made earlier today, which kind of sums up the point, is that, you know, the big thing of the Boomer Truth regime is that man is inherently good. And you can only understand history when you understand that man is not inherently good and life is tragic. And that's really what we try and get at in a lot of these. It's a sense of like almost like traditionalist realism. It's present in a lot of what Evola writes. It's present in it's a huge thread in the writing that we ask people to read, and it's a huge thread in our work, is that you must fundamentally have a mindset that is at odds with the modern world. And it is quite a difficult thing to maintain because you are constantly being bombarded with propaganda to the contrary.
No doubt about it. It's just the world you have to operate in. If your eyes are open, you know, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. You can't unsee things. You know, what was that stupid fucking Matrix character, you know, who wanted to go back to the stake or whatever. You can't do it.
Cypher.
You know, sorry. Yeah.
A weird aside, but he was in The Sopranos. I always like to think that's who was put back in the Matrix. Yes. as a mob lieutenant. Every time I see that actor in a different film, I like to think, oh, that's what they put him back in the Matrix as. But that's kind of by the by. But you're right. There's a lot of people, really, who I notice, especially with the lockdowns, they reasserted that kind of pre-2016 mindset in which they did essentially put themselves back in the liberal Matrix. And I find one of the more effective ways to jar people out of that is to like just bombard them with the stuff that the security state admits it has done. And if you understand, like we talked about, we did a very big stream about Prism, did a big stream about the stuff like Operation Earnest Voice, in which the US government is deliberately putting out an extreme amount of propaganda under false pretenses and using sometimes now admittedly like AI-generated faces and things like that. The thing I talked about when I talked about surveillance, and I talked about the fact that we have huge amounts of facial recognition, that since 2016 in the UK, we have had constant facial recognition trials of one kind or another, despite the police denying it and having to begrudgingly admit it every time it's found out that a private company is acting on their behalf. It's all of this stuff that is, I think, extremely good at jarring people out of it. It's less so the like debating and the rhetoric and the ideology. It is you wake up to reality with cold, hard reality.
As being the guy from Red Dragon, you know, you've got the journalist taped to the chair and you've got the slideshow of all these horrific examples of what supposedly liberal democratic states do to stay in power, and you're just sort of screaming, do you see? Do you see?
Yeah, and usually when you confront people with stuff like that, it's very strange. I used to sit around and talk in groups of people, and when certain subjects came up that were uncomfortable relative to the sort of happy illusion that a lot of people float through life ensconced in, I'd watch people literally fall asleep. They just sort of suddenly get drowsy and their eyes would start to close. And, you know, as everybody continued talking and, you know, one or two people off on the side would just drift off and fall asleep. Mm. The degree to which people don't want to hear things is really, it's amazing. It really is amazing once you've seen it.
That's something I've always referred to as like the Agent Smith effect.
Yeah.
The vast majority of people do have the Agent Smith programming within them. And if you continue to question the tenets of liberal democracy, the principles of sort of history and how we're supposed to look at it, and the perspective of certain events, that they just become these sort of irrational and enraged people, and very uncharacteristically so sometimes.
You do get people who are generally quite docile and generally quite apolitical, or at least outwardly claim to be, and that they believe in the idea of the neutral position of what is current reality. And you confront them with something that does not fit with their worldview but is undeniable, and you're right, they either shut down or they lash out. Or they're able to process it.
Or forget about it.
Yeah. Or that's a big one, I know.
They just repress it and it just, they're like, what? Did that really happen? What?
I mean, that's going to be the case with lockdown and all the COVID stuff.
Yes.
And given enough years, people will probably not even just for political reasons, but naturally as a self-defense mechanism against any sort of psychological harm, they will pretend that lockdown didn't happen, or yeah. that they were consulted about it at the start point, or whatever they need to do to justify it being moral and right to them.
Yep. And when you put the human intelligence aspect together with, you know, the various operatives that are more active trying to create circumstances, and then, you know, you look at the whole digital realm. You know, I was just to post some photographs of my father on Twitter. You know, I put the photograph down on the table and snapped a photo of it with my phone. And, you know, immediately the little square appears around the faces to focus on those, because the photographic software itself installed on your phone is designed to recognize faces and center on them, which is not some coincidence. It's not some, you know, value add. It's part of the whole integrated structure to identify the faces through all these various inputs. You know, when you go to type something on your computer and it, you know, recognizes that it's spelled wrong and suggests other spellings for you, or in a more obvious case, when you go to a search engine and you begin to type something in and it'll populate it for you 3 or 5 or 10 different ways, that's because everything you type is being transmitted and parsed and processed and then sent back to you. And so, you know, as you guys were saying earlier, it's not as though every one of us is some kind of big focus or target. It's not the case. Though there are enormous numbers of people walking around who are feds or assets or confidential informants or snitches, taken as a whole across law enforcement, defense, intelligence, other intelligence agencies, federal, state, local, municipalities, you know, there are enormous numbers of people out in the street, but they can run more material overall through digitally than we can even conceive of. So there you get into a numbers game where it's, you know, X number of instances of certain sets of terms were flagged associated with your identity, at which point it gets elevated to the level that somebody reviews it manually. You know, yes. I just, whenever people think about what's going on out there in terms of technology and what can be done with it, I remind myself of hearing that in the 1960s, we set up microphones across the world's oceans in order to hear Russian subs moving around. And just think about what it requires to cover the entire world's seas and oceans with microphones, even set at certain distances.
I was saying, and they accidentally recorded the 167 decibel bloop by accident.
the big bloop.
But the one silver lining to be a slightly androgynous freak is that those facial recognition things plugged into phones don't work.
No, it is very much that the technology is creaky. And what we found when we did our deep dive on Prism is the biggest problem the security state has is the sheer amount of information that it generates within itself. You mentioned the fact that it's much easier for the police to just record data on people, and they're quite lazy, and they would much rather have all of this filtered down to a point where they only send out a physical officer when they are certain of something, or when they believe that it is unavoidable that real world intervention needs to take place. But it's almost self-crippling in that way, in that these systems, fundamentally, we don't object to them because they are control systems. We object to them because they fundamentally do not work. They do not give you any of the supposed benefits you get out of them as a control system. As we always put forward as a mantra, the suffering is the point. The point of the system isn't anything apart from control and to mess with you and to make your everyday life more inconvenient and worse. And you have to strip away the ideology, especially, and understand that all of this stuff, the central position, the radical center, people say, well, you know, we need to accept some of this to make our lives better. It's just, once you understand it's coming from a place of evil, you are able to filter it better and realize that you have to reject it wholesale. I mean, I've got on screen here, the facial recognition stuff has become so perverse that they've begun justifying using facial recognition to plug the flaws in facial recognition. A lot of the trials around the UK now are actually based on the premise of making facial recognition more equitable. Because as the crime stats will tell you, the machines have started to realize that certain types of faces commit certain types of crime. The machines have become physiognomy woke, and they're having to train it out of them through these like equity schemes of trying to, you know, we need to construct the panopticon to get rid of the flaws in the panopticon is the logic being used. And it just seems so perverse when I came across it, that seems to be one of the primary justifications for facial recognition technology trials here in the UK, is improving facial recognition technology, because currently the nightmare state is not only a nightmare state, but it's slightly racist, and that the racism is the problem.
Yeah, so they'll have to go in and, you know, tune up that AI so that it's less racist. Well, there was also another point that was raised that I certainly agree with. I've often reflected upon myself. It was mentioned in the chat that you are not the target, but the passive collection of data makes it possible to change that when stepping out of line. Mm. Basically, it's the whole thing of simply the vast amounts of information that are available that they can turn to look at retrospectively. So, right, you screw up and, you know, you murder your wife or something, and then they come back and they take a look, you know, God forbid, and then they come back later and they just look and saw that, you know, you had Google searches for how to get rid of a body, right? That's the most obvious example of it. The police have gotten much more lazy because, you know, once, you know, a report comes in and it gets assigned to some detective or, you know, whatever you call it in Britain, you know, they just basically, they're lazy. They just pull up your cell phone data. They look at your text messages. They look at your emails. They look at the GPS stuff, and that's as far as it goes. But when you start to consider, you know, targets that are significant, that, you know, somebody important actually cares about, the amount of information they can crack open on you. I mean, even back in the old days, you know, people who buy firearms in the United States, you know, you get the firearm and you get a little paper envelope with it that shows a couple of the test rounds to show that it's been test fired and everything. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. If I were the FBI, what I would do is I would mandate that every firearm manufacturer had to send two of those, the cases and the cartridges, you know, to me. So that I could put them into an actual file cabinet, you know, for every firearm that's been sold in the U.S. over the past 50 years, there are two rounds that have come out of the barrel. So it doesn't matter necessarily if we can recover the firearm, because we can match it to the projectile. There are a lot of things out there like that they have set aside as background information. And if you're somebody who really pissed somebody off and they start digging into NSA records, or for example, the students that register as gifted, as I did when I was in school. And so, you know, when I was like 8 years old, I had IQ tests administered. You think that the state doesn't keep a record of everybody with an IQ over X amount? I think they do so. I certainly think they keep a record of everybody who's received chemistry training.
They
all
definitely
sorts
do.
Of stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's why in the UK we have what's called the CAT test. So it's not even necessarily a case of whether or not you're gifted. That's just there and on your record permanently. And it's you're right to say that a lot of what you're doing is policing by post hoc methods.
Yes.
This is something we sort of roundabout discussed the other day. I was looking at trying to download some books from Z Library. Now, owning large amounts of, let's say, revisionist literature about the mid-century is not in and of itself illegal, but if you happen to use a service like Tor to then access that material, it is then, well, I think, what was the phrase you used? It shows intent.
It shows intent and conspiracy.
Yes.
They say it shows that you're attempting to evade. Yes.
Yes. Mens rea. That's why, frankly, I don't go near, you know, VPNs or whatever. Not because, you know, I'm sure that they provide some superficial, like, you know, superficial protection against some low level person who's trying to, you know, track what you do on a computer, but they're not going to do a damn thing to organizations that actually matter. All they're going to do is add another set of these red flags that are going to be applied to, you know, determine whether you get escalated for manual review.
There's a guy on YouTube called Tom Scott, who's kind of a meme, and he's very, like, slightly leftist YouTuber person.
He's very Reddit.
Yeah, he's extremely Reddit, but he had, like, a weird moment of clarity at one point about VPNs, and he said that he doesn't use one because a lot of them are companies that come up, they get bought up, they go bust, No one quite knows where they come from. No one quite knows who operates them. But, you know, if you were the government and you wanted to gather a large amount of filtered information about the kind of people who would like to avoid your attention, what you would do is you would set up a large VPN and make it as cheap as possible.
Or free.
Or free, yes. So it's a great point that, as with the whole, like, Tor US Navy connection, it's very likely that multiple VPN services are fronts for the security state. And, you know, before people go, you're being paranoid, go and watch our Prism stream. Go and watch the fact that Vodafone, BT, you know, Verizon, basically the entire communications, the telecommunications network of the West is bought, paid for, and completely hand in glove with the security services to the degree that they give over their encryption keys and allow them to monitor the complete spectrum of their traffic on their cables in real time. If you don't believe that a VPN service can be a security state asset, then I'm afraid you are hopeless and naive. And I thought that was just somebody having like a moment of clarity with all like the Reddit, I'm on the world's biggest dam and I'm going to throw a balloon off it or some shit.
He's
like
beginning
that.
To believe.
Yeah. It's you have that sometimes though with people that they'll have like this one realization and they'll start and then they'll lose it. And it's just like, no, keep going. As I keep saying, extrapolate this outwards. If X is true in Y situation, why can't it be true in Z situation? When you start looking at things like that, you really do start to see all of this. I mean, I keep coming the slide back up, but every time I doubt the fact that the regime is evil, I just look at the GCHQ, you know, write a blog purporting to be one of their victims. Just like go out there, ruin somebody's life, and do it for any reason at any time, and you will not be punished because they are in power, and you are not. And it's just...
Yeah, the only thing is that won't, that doesn't change with any regime, even a good one, you know? No. And there will have to be the people who stay up late at night to protect people who do really, really nasty, shitty, evil things in pursuit of maintaining security. So that's the problem is, you know, even in the great, you know, Rock Candy Mountain mythical ethno state that will someday arrive in which, you know, all the women will be virtuous and all the men will be Chads, it's still going to be exactly the same. But the main point you're making, you know, about people who don't grasp this, they're not going to make it. I absolutely agree. Like at this point, like if anyone who simply doesn't understand everyone is a Fed, and what that is for and what it means, and yes, it's got its little, you know, sardonic twist to it, you know, pat myself on the back. Anybody who doesn't get that, I'm just, you know, I don't have time for you.
Yeah.
You're just not, you're a normie. You're a blue pilled normie.
Yeah. I did see someone in the chat earlier, basically saying it's like our in-group version of asking people, how would you feel if you didn't have breakfast this morning?
Yeah, it is. It's a real, to come back to your earlier point, I have some experience personally and secondhand from the fact that in the UK, if you are, let's say, a high school age, a secondary school age male with certain intellectual capacity, and if you express, say, certain thoughts to a therapist, the therapist by secondhand, I don't trust the, I've never trusted anyone who's involved in psychotherapy or psychology, but anyway, you will be essentially referred to the PREVENT program, and explicitly your intelligence will be referred to. I was given some very strange testing in retrospect, being somebody who was signaled, kind of pulled out from the pack as gifted at school. I was put through, you know, kind of what resemble like the early bits of like the MK Ultra testing stuff. Didn't go any further for me, but I personally know a couple of people it did go quite a lot further for, who, because they are quite naive and one of them was autistic, were trying to be helpful. They were too agreeable and they ended up volunteering for things that ended up getting them, you know, basically almost sectioned. They were almost put away for a very long time. And basically labeled as a danger to the British state because they were intelligent and unhappy, and that really was the extent of it. It's it's a disturbing thing to be privy to yourself, in kind of like, oh, these are, why am I being given these questionnaires? But when you realize that people can just be put away basically forever for having the wrong kind of mind, it really does, you really do begin to guard yourself a bit better.
And you have to. Yeah. And on the note, I know you guys don't want to run this thing forever. If, could I take a 1 or 2 minutes just to cover something?
Go ahead.
I was literally just about to say, is there anything you would like to wrap up with? So feel free.
Yeah. The main thing I just want to throw out there for people is that everyone is a Fed is an attitude of mind. It doesn't mean that you actually believe everyone is a Fed. It means that you assume, pending your own judgments, in some ongoing sense, you assume anyone could be. And that's just a certain way of approaching things. Now, if some sort of special actual intelligence operatives or group has decided to target you for something, you're probably going to be fucked up unless you really haven't been doing anything and you're not stupid and you... you treat it like they talk about in my favorite translation of the Tao, talking about a wise man trying to cross thin ice to reach firm land. So, you know, usually you're not going to have to worry about, it's like my old buddy Tim used to tell me, he's like, you're not going to have to worry about a real killer because they know that there's going to be gallons of shit that have to be cleaned up off the floor and, you know, fucking huge amounts of paperwork and trouble and nuisances and crap they're going to have to deal with. Even if they walk away from it, they're still going to have to look over their shoulder to make sure they didn't screw up on something or get caught on a camera, right? He's like, you don't have to worry about a real killer. The last thing they want to do is they get paid to kill. They don't want to kill, right? For the most part. So you don't have to worry generally about, you know, actual intelligence operatives unless you've been really stupid and called out their attention. What you do have to worry about is the low-level snitches who are hungry and who are desperate to get out of the situation they're in because they're having a huge amount of pressure put on them. And you're very likely to run around, run into those people in these kinds of circles, you know, in the way that Frody talks about, you know, the Jerry Springer, right. You know, they're not sending their best in all respects. And a lot of people actually are, sociopathic fuck ups who can't fit in anywhere else. And those are exactly the kind of people who are likely to get into trouble with the law and end up having pressure put on them. In order to deliver someone up. And if you run into those kind of people, then, you know, the only warning I can give you is generally they're under time pressure. Those people are going to be coming after you. They're gonna have a weird way of asking insistent questions. Low-level intelligence operatives will too, because they'll have been trained to just ask. Don't try to be cute about it. I haven't found the paperwork, but I guarantee you there are fucking manuals that tell them just openly ask, as though it's a forthright thing, as though it would be strange for the person not to answer you forthrightly. They're going to ask you lots of questions. They're going to be insistent about it in a non-confrontational way. And again, there's going to be a time sensitivity. So if you smell those kinds of things going on around you, then, you know, put your hand on your wallet and back up. In terms of the real intelligence operatives, from my experience of people whom I believed to be performing that function, I can't prove it. It's just my suspicion, and you know, it's raw speculation. But the judgments I've formed from those people is that they'll put bait in front of you, because they're going to want to find out if you're, especially if you have your shit together and you cross your T's and dot your I's and keep a civil tongue in your head and obey the law, they're going to wonder why it is you're doing what you're doing and why you seem to have the outlook and the capabilities you do. So they're going to want to find out if you're working for someone. And so generally they'll bring in bait to get you into situations. They'll bait you with cash. Usually of a straightforward kind. They'll look at what sort of plausible excuse they'd have for offering you money to do some sort of project. So they'll find some sort of project that fits for you and what you do and bring you in and have a chance to look at you, get you to stay in their hotels and spend time with their people and get drunk around their guys who can ask questions. That's not the worst kind of bait, though. You have to be careful because, you know, once you eat fairy food, you might end up under the hill. But the other kind of bait is information. And I have, in several occasions, I've talked about it many times on my channel. When I was in Turkey, you know, one of my good buddies, you know, would ask me, you know, to collaborate with him in making arrangements to get airplane parts from the United States and arrange for them to get to Iran, because, you know, Iran was under sanctions and wasn't able to get commercial airline parts, right? So to me, that was just like, fuck off. But if I had actually been working for someone, you must understand that I would then have been required to report that. So someone who dangled that bait in front of me could then be tracking my communications. If they dangle that bait and then a short time later, they see there's some outbound message on my part talking about that, then they can go ahead and triangulate and connect the dots and the rest. And even in small and private organizations, the better people who are more concerned about security and the rest will dangle bait for you. And they will hang something out there, whether it's, you know, some lurid detail about someone or whatever. And then they'll just sit back and wait and see what you do with it. You know, just give three different versions of a story to three different people and modify the what's discussed in those stories slightly for each one of the three versions, so that if it does hit the street, so to speak, you know that you gave slightly different details to each one of the three people. So if you hear the story breaks loose, you know who said it. Intelligence agencies do that. Organizations do it for their own, security or gatekeeping or whatever. So stay away from people who seem to be under any kind of time pressure. Like, I've gotten calls from people that I haven't heard from in years, and they're like, yeah, man, we should hang out, man. And yeah, and you know, I got a bunch of used firearms I'm selling. I got some that are, you know, receivers that, you know, some of them are ghost gun printed, but they're pretty solid, man. You know, you interested in buying anything like that? I'm like, fuck you, no. I think I'm going to go do something more entertaining, like clean my toilet, you know, fuck off. So people under pressure, people who seem to have a kind of urgency, people who appear out of nowhere, people who insistently ask questions in a way that's kind of strangely bland, like they were trained to be bland about it, and the bait. Most importantly, anything with the time sensitivity where you got to do something, you got to do something, and where there are various kinds of bait, I just don't touch it. The best approach I can recommend for everybody is to become a black hole into which people's secrets drop and don't get repeated. Personal secrets people tell me just as a matter of honor and friendship, I don't discuss, right? And there are any number of situations where other people will throw little details of information that if you were working for someone, you'd turn around and scamper off as quickly as possible to report it up to the food chain and, you know, maybe get yourself a bonus or, you know, get written up on the sales dry erase board as someone who brings in more information. You know, just don't fucking touch it. Become a black hole into which people's bait drops and disappears. Just shit it out. Be like, as my old friend Tim used to tell me, be like Hotai. Hotai is a particular incarnation of the Buddha, so to speak, or a version of the Buddha, who's known for traveling through life with this sack on his back, and anything anybody gives him, Hotai just throws it in the back in his sack, and then you discover that Hotai's sack doesn't have a bottom; it just falls right the fuck out on the ground, and he keeps going as smiling and innocent as one can be. So those are a few, you know, tangible things I can throw out there that I've experienced for my life. Hopefully it's useful. And otherwise, just remember, everyone's a Fed.
I will say that does tell it with my experience as well. And that I have had a lot of people, once you get into like the white hole circles, or, you know, you, as we did, and was, I don't know how, if it was silly or not, you end up in Zoom conversations with people like Alexander Dugin, through some quirk of fate that end up being semi-published when they shouldn't have been. As soon as you enter a world like that, everyone starts, you know, offering you things or telling you things or trying to get you to come to dinners and parties or do this, do that. You escalate in some way and it all becomes very uncomfortable. If you've ever been, you know, even anywhere adjacent to the corridors of power, or people who move in that world, they exist and they talk and they give off a different vibe. They have a different energy that isn't like normal people. Some of it is because some of those people are extremely competent and quite guarded and quite good, but the majority of them are, as you said, the low-level snitches. If Shallat said it was big in academia, it is as well. You can...
I know about that one.
If you learn to watch people and read people, you can spot them quite quickly because you get, like, the predator sense off them. I've done what you've done in the... I've existed in this sphere for a very long time with very little controversy in terms of, you know, personal stuff because I have basically stayed out of drama. I've stayed out of bickering. I've not got involved in private arguments. I've not got involved in stuff, even when people have tried to get me involved in it to a large degree. It's just advisable to make yourself as straightforward as possible and in many ways as boring as possible, because that's really how you survive. And that's kind of how we survive on this platform, despite talking about things that, if framed a different way, would get you removed immediately. It is just advisable, really, to play the tortoise in many ways, and to if you feel like you don't need to act, don't act.
Well, as maybe the final thing I want to finish off with, which is never ever go to a protest. It is just not worth it.
No,
they achieve nothing, and they solely exist so that your identity can be documented along with your details and the networks and relationships you hold can be mapped out.
As soon as what you're doing is legally classed as a protest, there is a massive amount of things the security state can do to you that it cannot normally do to you. The Special Demonstration Squad is simply just one example of that, that they can target you in that way. But as soon as you are an activist of some kind, you are at a protest of some kind, or you are in a space, you know, that is labeled in some way as a protest or as a sit-in or as an explicitly kind of action-based or direct action-based space, you are asking for trouble, like, you know, to not to shill too much. But that's why we are running our fourth Nomos event.
You beat me too. I was about to say.
This is why we tend to try and meet people in person, but in a private venue with its own security, with contracts in place. We can track the tickets through a large provider. We can track the venue through a large provider. It's all a private place, a private room, and those things are much more legally difficult to enter for the police. They're much more legally difficult to scrape information from the police, and also they're much more legally difficult to entrap people because you are not a protest. You are just, you know, you're essentially like a wedding or a birthday party. It is very advisable if you are going to meet people to do it in a kind of that kind of setting, in a setting that you have or someone you trust has some degree of control over, because that does limit your exposure in that sense. I do not, as many people do, interact with the general public.
Yes. And for anyone
fuck the general public.
Exactly. For anyone who is, of course, interested in coming to our next Nomos event, there is the link below in the description.
Yes.
I believe there is still a reasonable number of tickets still available, and we are, you know, very happy to be working alongside the Mises Institute, who we can guarantee are not feds.
Yes. the Mises Institute's pretty based, but I would argue that one of the best ways to assess someone is to actually meet them.
Yes.
And, you know, and to not completely kind of spill your guts.
The vouching for other people's system goes a long way. So I shall say thank you to Semi Ogog for joining us this evening for the stream. Your insights have been great, a great addition to what we've sort of had this stream. And you're sort of the perfect person to...
perfectly paranoid.
Exactly. To basically be just as paranoid as us, or at least as close to, because I like to think of myself as one of the most paranoid people around, which is why we are always correct. But thank you to the people that showed up to have a listen along, and the members, and the people that do the super chats and whatnot. So
I will say, as always, you can find Semi Ogog's links down below if you do wish to seek him out. Thank you guys for coming.
And keep looking behind your shoulders.
Yeah. Keep watching the sky.
There's an axe murderer behind you.
There we go, we're off.